You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 114 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I'm very glad to be joined this morning by Charlie. Morning, Charlie.
Hi, how are you?
Thank you so much for coming on. And we're going to talk through Teddy's Hirschsprung's, well, his journey thus far. I guess we'll kind of start where we usually do, sort of from the beginning, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Teddy's my second child, so no history of Hirschsprung's in our family at all. We've got a little girl, Thea, she's 8. So she was 5 when he was born. Relatively normal pregnancy. I think one thing that I've always wondered is he had a lot of hiccups, like towards the last kind of weeks, and obviously Dr. Google and all that you see, and it's like, well, maybe just check, you know, there might be a little bit something going on. But midwives and everything were really, you know, were fine, and everything was fine. Labor, as normal as any labor can be. Yeah, he came out fine. He did his first poo, you know, everything that you're expecting of a newborn baby. We were signed off to go home. And nothing kind of untoward, really, the first couple of days. He quite a mucousy baby, but it wasn't everything that we kind of hear, you know, from Hirschsprung's, really. It's like the green, you know, the bile. It wasn't like that initially. It was quite excessive. I think the first night in hospital, we had to change his bed a few times, but it was brown. Obviously, my second baby, so I knew there's a bit of mucus that can come out of newborn babies and stuff, but it did kind of drag on a little bit. And then the only things really of note was he was quite a sleepy baby. He didn't feed as much, you know, so there was always felt like there was a little bit of pressure there. He was breastfed, so it was always a bit like, I think maybe our daughter, she had been like quite a full-on baby. So maybe we just thought, oh, maybe this is just quite calm, but we've got a chilled baby. Sleeps more, eats, you know, a little bit less. But then I think it was on the sixth day, he just hadn't eaten for quite a while, and he thought, you know, certain amount of hours, certain amount of window, that was going to get concerned. Went to our GP, kind of checked him over. He was like, he's presenting well. Like, the only concern is that it's been a bit of time now since he's eaten, and obviously he's so young. So we sent this to our local hospital, and again, they just kind of put us in a room, encouraging us to feed, and he just wasn't, you know, bothered. At one point, he did, you know, cough up a little bit. I kind of caught it on the muslin, and that was that kind of bright green. And I was a bit like, that's, you know, not good. But I was glad I caught it on the muslin. Keep it, show the doctors. Ultimately, they kind of transferred us to kind of the baby ward, and they tried with an NG tube with some expressed milk. He would take a certain amount and then he would just kind of vomit. Lots of doctors kind of in and out that night. He went for x-rays, and then ultimately kind of early hours of the morning, they said, we're not sure what's going on. There seems to be, can't remember what they said, it's like a mass or a blockage or something in the kind of bowel area. We're going to talk to Alder Hey, which is our local kind of children's specialist hospital. And they essentially said they wanted to see him. So alarm bells kind of ring then, because Alder Hey is a very special hospital for very poorly children. And we were like, why is our baby, you know, going there? I remember phoning my husband and saying they want us to go to Alder Hey. And I just remember hearing him go, oh no, like what's wrong? So I had to get a very special ambulance with a very special, you know, kind of baby box to put him in. And so I just remember kind of walking out that hospital, kind of following this ambulance crew, just absolutely petrified, you know, horrendous. And we got into the ambulance. My husband kind of followed, and, you know, it's a fairly short drive, I don't know, about an hour to Old Hay. And as we got out of the doors, I noticed and flashed in the window that the blue lights had been on the whole time, that I didn't realize from being inside there. And I think the gravity of everything kind of suddenly, you know, hit me. But Old Hay was a really positive experience. We walked into the room, he was kind of taken, you know, ahead of us. And as we walked into the room, it was just like doctors, nurses surrounded him. And I do remember feeling that kind of overwhelming feeling of, we're safe here. You know, he's in a good place. And yeah, essentially they just hooked him up to everything, all that awful, you know, pictures you can imagine with babies with wires and all sorts, and not being able to kind of touch him. He had various things. He had a contrast x-ray to kind of look at the upper part of his, you know, insides, I suppose. Came back normal. They were like, we think maybe he's just got an infection. We're going to send you back to Glencoe, to your local hospital. And I was like, no, something wrong. Like, there's not. He wasn't feeding. He was just sleeping. You know, I was breastfeeding. I wasn't sure whether it was something I was doing. Am I poisoning him? You know, am I eating something wrong? Is he allergic to something? I was like, you know, it was important to me to breastfeed, but I was like, give him a bottle, give him like special milk, or do what he needs to do, you know, to make him feel better. I think there's one day when we just sat there, I didn't get dressed, and I was in my pajamas the whole time. We were just staring at his bed because he just wasn't, you know, he wasn't doing anything. He wasn't, you know, waking up. I was expressing milk, and then they helped me to try and feed him with the NG tube, and kind of, now I remember holding it and kind of watching the milk go down, and then the milk would go back up, and then thinking, oh, he's taken a bit, and then just vomited everywhere. And we had a really amazing neonatal nurse. She really advocated for us. I was like, there's something wrong. You know, the only reason we weren't sent back straight away is because they couldn't find the right ambulance to be able to transport him back safely, which kind of caused a little bit of a delay. I was like, we need to stay here. I was like, there's something. I don't know whether it's mother's intuition or just pure fear, but I was like, we need to stay here. And she really advocated for us, and she came back, and there was a nurse practitioner on, and she was like, I've been racking my brains all day. She's like, I don't know what it is. What I'm going to do is I'm going to have another x-ray on a different part of his, you know, tummy. Bear in mind, it's a very small little tummy anyway. And the, you know, amazing hospital that Old Hay is, they wheeled this amazing x-ray kind of machine from nowhere that kind of came over his bed. It took an x-ray, and that's when they saw that a lot of the issue was kind of lower down. So they said, we're going to do a washout, you know, a little baby enema, just see what's going on. And I remember feeling like, oh gosh, that's really invasive on a tiny baby. I didn't leave the room, but my husband kind of stood at the bed, and I just kind of was a little bit scared of it, I think. And they were like, whoa, explosive, like lots more meconium came out. You know, a really kind of successful washout, as we'd kind of come to become, you know, aware of. And he was like a different baby, alert straight away, ravenous, just fed then nonstop. We were like, he's fixed. Like, that was it. It's just a little bit of a blockage. Like, it's fine. And so, you know, we had a great night with him. And then next day, expecting to be discharged, like, oh, that was it. Like, what a worry over nothing. And they were like, just because of the washout in it, and, you know, we think it's probably right we do a rectal biopsy. And the doctor said, and I said, okay. And he was like, it's to check for, we're looking for Hirschsprung's disease. And he goes, I'm 99% sure he doesn't have it. And he was like, don't Google it. And I was like, okay. So it just went over my head. And then I remember asking the nurse as he left, what was that he said they were looking for? And she says, Hirschsprung's disease. But she says, he doesn't think he's got it. Like, don't worry about it. And so we were like, okay. Anyway, the next couple of days, we couldn't leave because he'd lost quite a lot of weight. They were looking for, you know, a certain amount of weight gain. And in the end, they let us go before the results came back. They said, if there's any issues, obviously let us know. But we left thinking, oh, thank God. Obviously, we've got our five-year-old daughter at home as well. He's just wondering why everybody's suddenly left after the newborn baby. So we got home that day and he classic stopped pooing. We were like, a bit concerned. Next day, phoned Alder Hay and they were like, oh, his results come back. It's negative. He hasn't got it. We're like, oh, brilliant. They're like, he might just be a bit constipated, do the bicycle legs and do a warm bath. And we were like, okay. Later through the day, getting a little bit more concerned. And then we got a phone call from one of the consultants at the hospital. And they're like, how's Teddy doing? We're like, well, he hasn't pooed, but we have had his results. We know he's not got Hirschsprung's. And they were like, I don't know what's happened. They weren't Teddy's results. They weren't Teddy's results. So they were like, we haven't had his full results back yet. But the fact that he hasn't pooed, they were like, we want you to come back. So we went back. That just straight away left, you know, dropped my daughter off with my dad and got there. And it was a very different conversation. It was like, we don't know, you know, exactly the extent, but we think, yes, he has got, I can't remember the ins and outs, but I think they take a certain measurement, don't they? And say the initial measurement, they couldn't find the cells or mixed cells. And that kind of started the journey, really. They told us kind of the next day they'd had, you know, had the full results back. And, you know, there was positive signs at that point because he had been pooing by himself intermittently. You know, he wasn't a typical kind of, you know, case. And they suspected short segment. But, yeah, that was kind of the confirmation, really. A bit of a roller coaster to get there. And I suppose just a little bit of relief to have, you know, an answer or to have an understanding. A little bit of confusion initially. So, okay, he's going to have the surgery, but then he'll be okay. Well, no, he'll always have it. And, you know, I think it takes a little bit to kind of get your head around. But ultimately, we were sent home, you know, 3 washouts a day, come back if there's any issues. And, you know, we were really lucky. We did, you know, the washouts are awful for anybody that has to come home and do that. It is, you know, something that you'd never have to think that you'd have to do to your child. You know, they're so tiny. And I remember kind of the first couple were, you know, really upsetting, really traumatic. I used to dread them. But actually, in a weird way, we came to like, I don't think enjoy them is the right word. We hate them like, just be like, oh yeah, that's a good one. And we would just feel like, yeah, we were doing such a good thing for him and he'd always be so happy. And, you know, it felt like, you know, we got very used to it. And yeah, we did that right up until his surgery, really. It was 2.5 months old when he had that. So, and they found out, yeah, it was a short segment in while he was in surgery.
Yeah. Wow. That's, I mean, even though it's not necessarily a typical diagnosis, there are still parts in there that I think anybody's had a child with Hirschsprung's would certainly recognize, with the whole sort of, yes, he did poo initially, but then everything kind of stopped. And then there was the sort of, I think the slow to feed is always a massive, massive one.
Yeah.
I know that's a big red flag for a lot of people. When you said where the milk goes down the tube and then comes back up and then goes out and comes back up, I think that's sort of a classic one. But really, really interesting to hear as to possibly why the hospital didn't think he had Hirschsprung's, because again, it's a specialist place for Hirschsprung's. And yeah. So they've presumably heard of it, treated, you know, many, many children with this condition. And yet still, I think it's still kind of presenting the classic symptoms. I think it's also interesting, you know, whose results did you get? I mean, I don't, if it wasn't Teddy's results, then whose results were you being told?
I know. And we don't harbour any kind of resentment. Alderney's an amazing place and we had amazing care there. But yeah, it was a bit of a shock to be told, oh no. And we didn't know much about it at the time. That could have been quite devastating to be like, oh, thank God, like, it's not all that. And then, oh, actually, they weren't your results. But I think, you know, the neonatal unit that we were on, I'm sure it had like maybe 5 beds or 6 beds. And there must have been another child undergoing very similar, you know, kind of investigations who clearly doesn't have Hirschsprung's disease. Because we got those positive results. But yeah, it was, I think that initially not knowing much about it, it was more of a relief when we found out he had it, because it just, you know, there's lots of awful things that it could have been at the time, you know, when we were told there was masses and shadows and all sorts, you know, in that area. But I suppose, yeah, we just didn't know what that journey was going to look like, I suppose.
No. And when, because again, I've heard this before as well, when they say don't Google Hirschsprung's, don't, you know, don't search it, don't whatever. Did you take their advice and not Google it, or did you Google it?
It was pretty hard to spell it in the first place. I was like, what is can I Google? But I think we did initially. I was a bit like, I don't know, I just kind of closed off a little bit. I was a little bit scared what I might find. Very briefly looked at it when they mentioned it, but we, you know, I think as many parents probably start off initially before you realise that you have to become, you know, medical yourself, really, and kind of advocate a bit more for your child, and the doctors don't always know better than you. Initially, certainly, we felt that, you know, we just kind of believed everything they said and just thought, not that they were, obviously, you know, they were going off what they thought at the time, but when I did look into it very briefly, I think you always see the worst case scenario and the horror stories, and I wasn't sure whether he would eat normally, you know, whether he would, you know, what it would look like. Would he, you know, have a, you know, stoma or, you know, colostomy or whatever kind of his future looked like. It wasn't very clear. I think that, you know, there is a big spectrum, as we've like said before, in terms of the disease. I think that's something that we found straight away was a bit like, go away and see how you get on. And if you come across problems, then we can help. We've got nutritionists and we've got doctors and we've got gastro and all this kind of stuff. Whereas, you know, he had his pull through surgery. It was short segment. He was doing really well. And we got sent home, told about enterocolitis. And we were a bit like, when we left, we asked the doctor, same doctor actually, who told us he didn't think it was Hirschsprung's. We said, you know, what to look out for enterocolitis? And he was like, it's really rare. Like, don't worry about it. We were like, oh, okay. We thought it was like a given that he would probably get it, you know, multiple times. And he was like, no, it was quite rare. You know, just if he ever, everybody's different. Because we were like, well, what to look for? Should he go X amount of times a day? Should it look like this? Looks like everybody's different, you know, like just see how you get on. And we were kind of sent home, post pull through, don't have to do washouts anymore, don't have to do this anymore, see how you get on. And it was a bit rocky at that point. He would get very distended, and even though he was, you know, going to the toilet, but God, I've got whole albums on my phone of like various points of, you know, his tummy, and it looked like this and it looked like that. We ended up in hospital twice, going back once because he started vomiting again, but it was clear he was just backed up. He wasn't poorly, he wasn't presenting. And as soon as they did a washout in hospital, again, fine, eating, not being sick again. And the second time we went back with his distension, a nurse said, are you doing dilations? And we were like, what's the dilation? You know, like, no. And she taught us to do the kind of, you know, the dilations to help kind of relieve anything else, if there's anything, you know, kind of building up. And that was a game changer for us. You know, we would do that if you, you know, his tummy looked bad, it would help him, you know, pass wind or, you know, go to the toilet maybe a little bit. And that kept us out of hospital. We kind of weaned him off that. And touch wood, because he's only three, we've had a relatively easy ride of it compared to most people. Awful, traumatic, horrific, probably still a little bit damaged from that first, couple of months, 6 months to a year, certainly. But, I remember saying to his consultant in the hospital, I just wish we could like fast forward 2 years or something so I can know what we're dealing with, like how he's going to fight, be. And he was like, don't wish his life away. He was like, you'll work it out, you'll be okay. And he was right. I think that for us, just the future and with it being so uncertain and not really knowing what we might come up across was scary. But actually, I think for any parents that are maybe new to this or like younger than Teddy, it's so scary in the beginning. You teach yourself, though, you become very aware, you will learn what's normal for them, what works for them, and how to, look after them. And it does get easier. It really does. But yeah, it was definitely scary, but I feel like, again, always touch wood, we're in an okay phase. But that's not so that we won't have issues, in the future, because as we know, it doesn't go away post surgery.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, everybody is different, which is why it makes it so, so difficult to say anything with any definitive outcomes. Like we were talking about before with things like Facebook groups and Instagram posts and whatnot. And you see all manner of, in inverted commas, advice about you should try this, eat this, don't eat this, do this exercise, do this type of washout. And I think all of those are meant with the best intentions.
Yeah.
But everybody is different. So it's really, and that's why it's so difficult, because it's a lot of trial and error, I presume.
And yeah.
A lot of finding out what works for you, which I guess is the really, really difficult bit. And I'll sort of go back a bit on what you said about parental instinct. And it's not just the initial diagnosis. I mean, I know that thankfully you trusted your instincts and you knew something was wrong, and thankfully, got Teddy the diagnosis he needed. But then I guess you're also using the same instinct for everything else in terms of, what yeah. works, what doesn't. Is that the case as well?
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, you just come to know them. I think, as I say, we've been lucky. There's not really anything that we've ever noticed in terms of his diet or anything, you know, but when we started weaning from 6 months, you know, he'd been exclusively breastfed. You know, I'd undergone all sorts of things, removing the elements of my diet. Can we try and remove some of this gas? You know, no dairy, no gluten, you know, all sorts of things, which didn't, you know, necessarily make any difference. But you know, from kind of 6 months on, that fear of starting to introduce food, you know, and what does that look like? Because, you know, we'd been told about FODMAP and, you know, watch Brachius veg maybe, and, you know, they can't really process anything with the skin, all that kind of stuff. And I was a bit like, well, it's hard enough for an anxious parent anyway, that we'd start bringing food into it. But even like, for, you know, does he have a bit of formula or a bit of cow's milk and what that looks like? And I think we just had to take things, you know, little by little. We were always really scared of, you know, certain illnesses and, you know, worried that he would be kind of poorlier, you know, quicker. But I think over time, we've just realized you have to just take everything as it comes and just to see, you know, try it if that doesn't work or if he's, you know, particularly, you know, doesn't take that very well. Because we would ask, you know, what probiotics? And we'd go a bit like, not really any evidence, you know, or, you know, other things that we would ask and, you know, try and get, what should we be doing this? And it was always a bit like, maybe try it. If it works, then great. If it doesn't, then it doesn't, you know, so we're a bit like, we've had to teach ourselves. I'm sure every parent in that space. And to your point, there's such a wide spectrum of, you know, in terms of case by case, and each, you know, child is different. So I think trust in your gut, and especially kind of, I suppose, with weaning, we were just really careful not to just introduce loads of things at once. We could maybe figure out like, that doesn't work, or, you know, maybe that's caused, you know, this. But yeah, over time, and he is, you know, three, he'll be four this year, we've just found that there's nothing specific that doesn't work for him. So you just have to treat him as a normal, you know, where we've got an 8-year-old, so treat him as normal as possible and, you know, and see how you get on, really. I think for us, we get to see, you know, somebody at Alderhay once a year, and then we just go, they weigh him and they go, okay, yeah, he's fine, he's been fine. You know, we've been lucky with him with potty training. You know, he's potty trained really well, which we were told, you know, there may be a little bit of a delay with, you know, potty training. But yeah, I think every child is different. I suppose you just got to take your own journey, take the advice that comes, and listen to people like yourselves and like Georgina doing the website, and the support that is there now. It wasn't really there when we came into this kind of space, but everybody's got their own journey, right? You've just got to kind of muddle through with a bit of support here and there and see what works best for your baby or for you or whoever's kind of dealing with it.
Yeah, I think so. I think, and it's so difficult to give those sort of vague terms, because everybody wants, and I think quite rightly, I think everybody wants definitive. Everybody wants do this, don't do that. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And Hirschsprung's doesn't work that way, and never has done. I meet so many people with so many different, whether it be diets, whether it be symptoms in terms of, you know, this doing this particular thing doesn't work, but doing this does. But it's interesting you say about the probiotics as well, because that's something that I was told many, many years ago.
about making sure you have, you know, things like Yakult and probiotic drinks and this, that, the other, which again makes total sense because they're what's a good stomach bacteria or something or other.
Yeah, good for the gut.
So again, that would make sense to drink those, but it's interesting, and it'd be really interesting to know, I think, how much of an effect they have. I don't know if there's any studies, I've got no idea.
Yeah.
How much of an effect they have specifically on people with Hirschsprungs. Because I again, sounds reasonable that they would work, but whether they actually do, I'm not sure.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A CogniMovement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the CogniMovement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I think there's a massive piece around gut health, which again is not really explored because, you know, people say like your gut is your second brain, right? And everyone else day to day is like, look after your gut, for it, like you say. But we noticed with Teddy, he had quite bad eczema as well when he was younger, kind of bad skin, which can be related to kind of gut health and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, it's not a family trait. You know, my daughter doesn't have it. And also he was really sickly, you know, in the first couple of years, which kids are when they go to nursery. But we noticed that he would just pick things up, you know, quicker. Not necessarily have them worse, to be honest. He's, you know, we've just had chicken pox in the house and he had it very briefly over a couple of days, very minor. And then my 8-year-old caught it and just had it, you know, horrendously. So actually, in terms of immunity, not, you know, he's quite strong in that sense, but he would pick up everything. And I just be like, going to the doctors, like, is it his gut health? Like, he's got, you know, he's got a gut issue. Must be some connection. They'd be a bit like, I don't know. You know, so, you know, I'd be standing at Erin Holland and Barrett looking at these child, you know, prebiotics and what's the difference between a prebiotic and a probiotic and, you know, trying all these things. And it was a bit like, well, nobody's really looked at it, to your point, you know, there's no research done. So try it. If it works, great. If it doesn't, then, you know, as with anything, it's just like a trial and error, isn't it? Like, okay, we'll try that. Or what I have found with him, maybe it could be coincidence, is just being really strong on the vitamins, just from an immunity like perspective, as any parent trying to get vitamins in your child, but quite consistent, you know, with his vitamins. And on the whole, yeah, he's healthy and fit, but I would be really interested, yeah, to see what that kind of, you know, if there is a positive, because again, on the Facebook groups, people have been advised from their medical professionals to try certain things. So, yeah, again, just like, I suppose, the scope of the disease, the scope of the care or the kind of advice and all the awareness is very different as well.
Yeah,
Which is why any kind of research project or anything, I'm always like, yeah, like, give us, like, well, let us put, like, plow as much information as possible so we can start seeing the findings of things like this that make a difference.
Absolutely. And I think that's the interesting point you made about gut health. And there's a lot of research done between gut health and brain health, mental health. And I think that's something that I've been really interested in these sort of past couple of years and with people I talk to, and how having potentially stomach issues or pain within the stomach can really affect the brain. And there's a lot of studies within that show there's a big link between the two, which I find fascinating. So I think that's something that I think, and again, whether that's, I'm not sure that's specifically Hirschsprung's, that could just be stomach issues. So it could be anybody with IBD, IBS, Crohn's, whatever.
Yeah.
They could potentially have sort of that, be susceptible as well to more issues. But I think that's something that is really, really interesting. And I think as time goes on, we'll probably start to hear a bit more on that kind of research, I think.
Yeah. I think that will, can make massive changes to people's quality of life and stuff as well, can't it? If that's, I think, yeah, there's a massive key piece. It's like a missing part of the puzzle, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I think it's a tricky one. It's a really tricky one because it's one of those things where, if like you were talking about with Hirschsprung's symptoms, either via an X-ray or just by looking at someone, you can see Hirschsprung's symptoms. Like you talked about the distended stomach. Or if you do an X-ray and you can see that there's a blockage, you can see that there's a physical issue. Whereas the link between gut health and brain health is a lot trickier because you can't necessarily see it.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that's possibly a big issue as well. But I also really like stories like this because, like you said, trying to or wanting to fast forward the first couple of years, I think is a really, really common story that I hear. And it's interesting because people talk to me about Hirschsprung's and say, oh, it's a childhood condition, which it isn't. It's you will always have Hirschsprung's. So
it's hard to get your head around, right? Like, I couldn't understand it at first. I was like, what? Like, you have this surgery and you take away that bad bit. Wow, like, it's gone. Like, I don't get it. Like, it's really, it's hard to get your head around it.
Yeah. And I think, but even medical professionals have said to parents that I've talked to, and actually I was told this as well, that I had Hirschsprung's.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have Hirschsprung's. And that's what I'd said again before doing this podcast. That's what I'd said for years. I was like, oh, I had Hirschsprung's. And actually it's like, well, it was somebody I had on who is a nurse. And she said, well, it didn't grow back, so you've still got it. I was like, oh, yeah, of course it didn't, actually. It didn't grow back. So I think it's important to know that you have it to a degree. I mean, in terms of, I know Teddy's only three, but what's his kind of understanding of his own condition?
I don't think he's got any, really. I think the only time it's really in our day-to-day life, we are obsessed in this house with poop. Like, you just are all the time. And like, between me and my husband, like, has he pooed yet? And you'd be like, no, I haven't cleaned one. Have you cleaned one? I'm like, no. I'm like, okay. And you'll never really, it'll have to, we've got to the point now where you can go a day, like 24 hours. So we'd be like, okay, just, he needs to go today. Like, before we start to panic. That's never happened that he's gone longer than 24 hours. Maybe, I'm sure if we've phoned on ahead of like, is he well?
Yeah.
Just to wait. Like, he'd be fine. So we're still, you know, obsessed with that. And even, you know, I say he's potty trained, we still have to like keep the potty around for us. You know, he goes to school in the morning, he goes to a play group in the afternoon. So for us, we need to make sure he goes in the morning for it to be, you know, a smooth day, shall we say, and make sure there's no like, no accident, you know, no accident, make sure. And so him having that in the morning to sit as a visual thing to be like, you know, he probably, when we've removed it and stuff in the past, he doesn't think about it. He won't necessarily go, oh, I'll leave the lounge where my breakfast is and the telly is and go to the toilet, you know. And so in terms of his day-to-day, there's nothing. He doesn't have to have any kind of care plans or anything. With school, I still, you know, write it all on the forms. And then you usually feel like you have to give like a war and peace of it's a bowel condition. It may mean X, Y, Z, things to watch out for, things to tell us about, you know, that kind of thing. But in terms of day-to-day, you know, no, not really. I do wonder what that would, you know, at what point we will have that kind of conversation with him. I think that, you know, I said to you kind of in the prep for this, our big focus now is the genetics of it, because I want to be, I find it my responsibility to, he's three, so this is like 25 years in the future-ish, maybe, when he, if and when he decides to have a family, but I want to be able to come with him with everything of what that looks like for him, because that's probably when it, unless again, you know, touch wood, there may be stumbling blocks, you know, in between then. But for me at the minute, that's what does that look like for him and his future with, you know, with procreation, you know, what I want him to be. I don't want him to go, well, I don't know if I am worried about having a baby because I don't know whether my baby would be really poorly and will I pass something on, or I want him to be fully informed at that point that this is what that will look like. And God, science, we hope will be so far ahead in 25 plus years time or whatever that looks like. But if it means that he need, you know, at the minute he's only going to be able to have ret testing, as you know, everybody can, and we're kind of in the process of that. So our local authority has has got in touch, and we've kind of sent the initial forms and stuff. But you know, me and my husband, when we were talking about this today, you know, last night, we were saying, well, you know, what does that look like actually when it comes back? Whether it says yes, you have got a defective ret gene, okay. But what if you haven't? There's other genes that could be at play. There's other reasons, you know. So then when do we stop, or what is kind of next for us? So I think for his future, really, or that's probably going to be when he really gets an awareness of it, you know, in terms of what does that mean? Because, yeah, it's genetic. We don't know where the genetics have come from, because as far as we're aware, there's no family history. And we had... It was one of the questions in the hospital. They said, have you got any other children? And I said, yeah, I've got a daughter. And as I've got an older child. And he was like, is it a girl or boy? And I was like, girl. And they went, oh, yeah, it's rarer in girls. And I was like, oh, but does that mean she carries the gene, or does it, you know, it's still, there's a bit of a kind of, it doesn't really matter if it came from me or my husband's side. Like, it doesn't matter. We're not going to have any more children in that respect in terms of, you know, our family's complete anyway. But then for our children, what does, you know, what does that mean? Because we've been lucky with Teddy so far, but we want them to have a full eyes wide open when they go into, you know, the future, what that looks like for them.
Absolutely. And I could talk about genetics all day. I find it absolutely fascinating. And I think the really difficult bit is that, again, like we said before, there's a lot of vague answers. There's no clear... oh, it came from here, so therefore it's got X amount of percentage to be passed on from here to here to here, or whatever. Yeah. But, I mean, again, talking to as many people I've had, I think I've had every type of scenario where, you know, people have had more children and they haven't had the condition, where the parents had the condition but they haven't passed it on to their children, where the girl has it but the boy doesn't, where the boy has it and the girl doesn't. I think it's... It's every time somebody said to me, well, it's passed through this and this will happen, I've said, well, actually, I've got an example where that hasn't happened. So
yeah,
it's
actually,
yeah, it is. It just, you know, it's so tricky. So any information that can be passed on, or any information that we can know definitively, with genetics. And I think the next decade will be really, really interesting because there's so much going on at the moment in terms of research, especially at older hay. And I think, you know, again, by the time Teddy's in his sort of teens, I think it'd be really, really interesting to see where we are.
Yeah, that's exciting because I think that just feels like that next like duty, like for him. I don't want him to ever, you know, worry about it. He's got, you know, very tiny little scars on his tummy that maybe one day he might go, what's that? You know, what's that? Or we'll talk and we'll say, you know, when you're poorly or, you know, when you're in hospital, he's got no kind of recollection. You know, my poor daughter has, you know, at five, she was kind of very aware of that. And we bought the book, I can't remember the name of it now. But it's a brilliant kids book that I'm sure you'd have seen, that was made by a mum who, his little boy had Hirschsprungs, and it's like a picture book. And actually, sometimes I've used it for like play groups to be like, and it's a children's book, but it gives you a very just top line info of what it is, what it could look like, you know, what the issues are. And so we've got that and it's in his room and we've read it before, but I don't think he's made that connection of, oh, I've got that, or, you know, So I don't know what part that will play in his future. Again, I hope, you know, not a lot, just something, you know, a bit of in the past. But yeah, there's definitely, when it comes to, you know, family for him, I think that's going to, well, it would be, wouldn't it? If you knew that you had something, you would want to know what that looks like so that you could just prepare for it, you know, at least. But yeah, so we'll see where that goes.
Absolutely. But no, thank you so, so much for coming on and sharing Teddy's story. And I think it's really important to have these kind of positive stories as well, where yes, obviously there was, you know, very difficult at the beginning, but it's great to hear that he's doing so well and living essentially a normal, as normal could be, in inverted commas, life. But thank you. And obviously I wish you and your whole family and Teddy all the very, very best for the future.
Well, thank you. And thank you to you again, you know, people like you and like Georgina and stuff that we've mentioned that make a massive difference to new parents going through this. Just having, you know, someone to talk to sometimes, or just good resources, or, you know, just a bit of scope. Because as we touched on when we came into this journey not that long ago, it was like hardly any info and you kind of have to muddle through, or you see the worst case scenario and it's traumatic anyway. So yeah, thank you for doing this because it's going to help so many people.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.